Welcome back. We're going to pick up where we left off, and it's the Terry Show Part 2, Monkfish, Tab 10. Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On to something a wee bit easier, Monkfish. As John said, behind Tab 10, there are a number of documents, including the PDT report, scoping comments, timeline, the committee meeting summary, public comments, and a copy of Phil's PowerPoint he's going to present to us. Little background, the PDT presented its initial report to the SSC in early March, and the Monkfish Committee met last week to review the PDT's recommendations on the reference points and specifications, the scoping comments, as well as a suite of other potential management measures for Amendment 5. I really want to underscore, we have a very tight timeline, but the committee, after your collective advice today, plans to meet at the end of May, and then once again jointly with the AP in order to have a focused range of alternatives for analysis in the DEIS available at our June meeting in Portland. And I'm going to turn this over to Phil to provide us a summary of the report and a PowerPoint and whatever else you got for us. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you. I would like to just add to Terry's comment that the Mid-Atlantic Council is going to meet on June 9th or thereabouts to make their recommendations on final action. I'm going to give a quick summary of the PDT report. This is a revised and abridged version of what I gave to the SSC. I'm going to skip quickly through the plan summary because I did that for the benefit of SSC members, stock status, and then get into Amendment 5 and the reference points. The FMP, as everyone knows, was implemented in 99, two management areas, and there's a close linkage with the scallop and multi-species fishery expressed through the days at sea usage requirement. The directed fishery is managed by trip limits and days at sea, and the incidental fishery is managed by possession limits in order to allow vessels to land their incidental catch and minimize bycatch. There is quite a substantial amount of incidental catch in other fisheries of monkfish. Framework 4, which was implemented in 2007, established a three-year target tack for the north and the south, and that tack was used as a basis for calculating the days at sea and trip limits. The incidental catch component is subtracted from the overall target TAC, and actually we would have to call this target total allowable landings before calculation of the trip limits and days at sea. Framework 4 implemented for the first time directed fishery trip limits and days at sea reductions in the north. The TAC three-year specifications are automatically extendable beyond 2010 if no new action is taken, and in fact, in the case of Amendment 5, because that won't be effective until 2011, we'll be availing ourselves of that provision. Most recently, monkfish was assessed in the Data Poor Stocks Working Group in 2007. The terminal year of data for that assessment was 2006. We established new biomass reference points based on the new model and updated the estimates of FMAX, which is the overfishing threshold based on a yield per recruit analysis, including the revised estimate of natural mortality. As a result of that, the conclusion of the working group was that both stock components are rebuilt and overfishing is not occurring. They did comment, as you all have heard many times, the results of this assessment are accompanied by substantial uncertainty and need to be viewed with caution. This table summarizes the reference points for fishing mortality threshold, which is also our FMSY proxy based on FMAX. The current 2006 fishing mortality rates are at about 30% of the threshold. The target, this is overall biomass target of 92,200 in the north and $122,500 in the south, and those are our BMSY proxy values. 2006 biomass, both stocks were above that, and hence the conclusion that the stocks are rebuilt. And the minimum biomass threshold is actually higher than one half. It represents the lowest observed value in the time series that was used. I believe that was 1980 to 2006. Amendment 5, the primary purpose, which you all decided on in November, is to establish ACLs, AMs, and the other reference points to comply with the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act and National Standard 1 guidelines. Set the target TAC and days at sea and trip limit specifications to replace the existing ones, and also to consider adopting ITQs and or sector management programs, time permitting, if we complete the work on the other elements. The timeline, briefly, is that the final EIS will be approved in November. As Terry noted, you'll be deciding the final measures to be considered and analyzed in the DEIS in June. So between June and October, we will be working on that DEIS, and you'll be getting it before your November council meeting. We'll go to public hearings in the January-February timeframe, and the councils will approve final measures in April 2010. I believe the Mid-Atlantic Council is, I've got that date here somewhere. I believe they're, where did I put that? Sorry. The Mid-Atlantic will meet April 13th, 2010, and we'll meet April 27th, 2010. So they'll be meeting prior to, and according to the regulations for jointly managed plans, final measures have to be approved by a majority of both councils. Fortunately, to this point, we've had concurrence on both councils on measures that we've adopted. Okay, the plan development team recommended MSY using the proxies for fishing mortality and biomass target, and using the calculation. Initially, we did the calculation with total biomass, and on the advice of the SSC, we corrected that to exploitable biomass. And so the values that we initially released in the report were incorrect, and these are the corrected values, which is one of the revisions I've made to the report. MSY is the long-term average. The next slide is the overfishing limit. Overfishing limit is an annual level of catch, and that catch can and actually is expected to fluctuate above and below MSY depending on stock conditions. In the current condition, with the stock being well above the biomass target, the overfishing limit is actually higher than MSY. And this number also was revised from the initial release to reflect a calculation based on exploitable biomass. To calculate, the control rule that would be adopted for overfishing limit is F threshold times B current using exploitable biomass. For these reference points, MSY, OFL, ABC, ACL, we will be adopting control rules, and I'll get to that in a minute in terms of why that's important. ABC accounts for scientific uncertainty in the estimate of OFL. As we noted, there's substantial uncertainty, and the PDT recommended that ABC be set less than OFL and also be less than or equal to MSY. due to a high degree of uncertainty in the assessment. In the report, which is in document number one in your folder, in the collection of figures at the end of the report, is a table where the plan development team enumerated most of the sources of scientific uncertainty. That's table four. But we also noted that we didn't have the capability of assigning a quantitative value to these so that we could simply formulaically establish scientific uncertainty. The nature of this, the assessment, doesn't give us those kinds of capabilities. So there, we advised the SSC that it would be somewhat of a subjective approach. And as you heard Steve Cadron yesterday, they actually have come up with an approach that's not based on evaluating scientific uncertainty and establishing a percentage buffer, but using the average Fs applied to current, average Fs over a time when the stock was rebuilding applied to the current biomass. And that's an interim ABC that they're recommending. Annual catch limits are actually the level of catch that serves as a basis for invoking accountability measures and to prevent exceeding the overfishing limit. They may be set annually or on a multi-year basis and cannot exceed OFL. The PDT recommended, and I believe that the SSC is concurring, that ACLs for monkfish equal ABC because there's no technical basis for setting it below ABC. Scientific uncertainty is accounted for in calculating ABC to the extent that we can do that, and therefore the catch limit is going to be set equal to ABC. The accountability measures are intended to prevent or respond to exceeding the ACLs and take into account management uncertainty. We've had this discussion with respect to skates earlier today, using somewhat of a similar model. There are some differences. The PDT proposes two types of accountability measures, or at least offered two types of accountability measures for consideration. One is a proactive accountability measure that would be intended to prevent approaching or exceeding the catch limit. And the other is the reactive, that is, if you do reach your limit, what would happen? Table number five in this report provides a list of what the PDT could identify as sources of management uncertainty. I'm sure there are more. But in a nutshell, much of the management uncertainty results in violation of the assumptions used in the analytical model that we base our management measures on. That is, the model that we use to establish the days at sea and trip limits for a given target catch. And so we have to assume a number of things in doing that. For example, that the fishing behavior is going to be reasonably similar in the subsequent year as it was in the year on which we have our data, that the incidental catch, the amount of incidental catch, is going to be reasonably similar to the previous year. If those things change, that's a source of management uncertainty. And so we just gave some examples of what those are. There are some other ones that affect behavior that would cause those sorts of changes, such as fuel costs. When fuel costs go up, all of a sudden fishermen behave differently to try and minimize the impact of the fuel costs, and that's going to change their effort patterns and result in management uncertainty. Things occur in other FMPs that cause indirect impacts on the monkfish FMP due to the fishermen's responses to changing regulations and other fishery management plans or to changing circumstances. And therefore, that's another source of management uncertainty. Proactive AMs are the ACT, the annual catch target. This is not required in the guidelines, but it is allowed for. And it's basically the basis for setting the management measures. And this would apply regardless of the management system we ultimately adopt. But we would have a catch target. And that would be used to calculate days at sea and trip limits, as we've done in the past, or the size of the pie that's going to be shared out among various catch share participants. If discards cannot be monitored sufficiently, we're going to have to assume something based on extrapolation of the observer data. But so we would take our annual catch target and subtract some portion to account for expected discards, and then come up with a target allowable landings number that we would use to actually do the analysis to set up the management measures. The PDT offers two different methods for setting the ACTs. One is the bottom-up approach, and one is the top-down, and I'll go into a little more detail in the next couple of slides on that. One thing to keep in mind is these are accountability measures. Therefore, it would not trigger a management action if it's exceeded or if it's not reached, if there's an underage or an overage. This is like the conversation you had earlier, but in this case, the PDT is anticipating that the actual catch will fluctuate above and below the target for various reasons. As long as you're not approaching your catch limit, there's not necessarily a cause to adjust those management measures without giving a due consideration to the reasons why that overage or underage occurred. Those reasons could be biological. They could be events in other fisheries that cause effort shifts. It could be that the measures within the FMP are not properly calculated. But once the overages and underages occur, we can look into the reasons why by analyzing various sources of information and determine the appropriate course of action in the next specification setting process. The proactive AMs, whether you do it bottom up or top down, provide a buffer against approaching the ACL and invoking those reactive accountability measures. The top-down calculation of ACT would essentially be you have your ACL, you come up with some estimate of what you think management uncertainty is in terms of a percentage, and apply that to the ACL and say 30%, 20%, 50%. If you can do it quantitatively, that would be more ideal, but likely we can't. And therefore, we have to do it somewhat subjectively in a precautionary way and say, you know, everybody has to agree that this is the buffer that should be used. And the bottom-up method, we have the current target tax, and we look at the status of the stock relative to our biomass target and the fishing mortality rate, and apply some sort of precautionary increase to the TAC, account for the discards, and use that as the basis for calculating your management measures. Again, we don't have a quantitative way to set that increase. It's what people are comfortable with, in a sense. We don't have the projection capability to see what the impact of certain levels of catch would be. Although, using the scale model, it's not technically a projection, but we did this with framework number four, and that is we applied the catch target to the model to see what would happen to the biomass. We can do that again in this instance, but it's not technically a projection. It's not looking into the age structure and any of that. Now, the reactive AMs are designed if you get to or exceed your ACL or getting close to your catch limit. Those would take effect automatically, and we haven't gotten down at the committee level to what types of reactive accountability measures we would be talking about, and I guess it depends on how close, when you trigger them, you trigger them just before you get there, well before you get there, or after you have exceeded the ACL. But they could include closures to the different sources of mortality on monkfish, reductions in the catch target in the subsequent years. But if we have proactive AMs and the buffer is sufficient, we're not going to get there. The plan development team did not make any recommendations on reactive accountability measures. Another aspect to think to keep in mind is that right now the third triennial cooperative survey is underway or has just ended, and the stock assessment is scheduled for 2010, which is just about the time we're submitting this amendment. This results in a circumstance where we adopt the control rules and do the environmental impact statement to analyze a range of reasonable alternatives for the outcome of the next assessment, and applying this process to the new assessment results. And then once the assessment is completed, the calculations would be automatic. So the public won't have a great idea of what some of these reference points will actually be when the plan takes effect. And just to sum up here, going back to the annual catch targets, if we use the top-down method, which relies on a calculation of ACL and a buffer below that, when the assessment is completed, after the amendment has been submitted, ACL is going to be recalculated. Therefore, you don't really know what the annual catch target is going to be, since it depends on the ACL. With the bottom-up approach, since it's based on just a target tack that's increased from the current target tack, it's not dependent on the results of the assessment. When the new assessment comes out, what will change is the size of the buffer between the catch target and the catch limit. But the catch target, which is used to calculate days at sea and trip limits, or to inform potential catch shareholders what amount of monkfish that share represents, that essentially would be known when we go to public hearings in February and or January, and won't change unless the assessment is so radically different than the past one. And in fact, you know, the ACL drops to a level that's below the catch target that we've established. And that's it in a nutshell. Hope I didn't go on too long.
Paul Howard.
Just one thing you said, Phil, I think you better correct. You said that one reactive AM might be in the following year automatically reducing the target. That in itself doesn't, you need measures that would meet that. So you just can't go from our ACT this year is this, we okay. went over the ACL, you said that
let
we
me,
can lower the ACT.
Let me clarify then, you're correct.
Measures.
What I'm saying, what I said is not inconsistent with what you said. Once you recalculate the catch target, then you go through the steps of recalculating the associated management measures.
It's got to be in the plan. You can't like do a framework.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I said that. It is automatic, but it would still have to be that's just a one way of a reactive. You may have reactive AMs that do things prior to getting to the limit, and therefore you don't have to, you know, recalculate or whatever. We anticipate that you know, every 3 years or so, we will be going through this specification process, and ideally have a stock assessment completed a year before, so we have all that information to use, and not get in a situation where, you know, we do the specifications and then 2 months later we get an assessment and have to go back and redo everything.
Who else in the council?
Okay. Okay, I'm prepared now to summarize what the committee did with this information.
It's probably a good idea.
Okay. You have a draft summary in your binder, and in fact, it's draft because the committee had not had a adequate opportunity to review it and get back to me with comments, and in fact, I have made at least one editorial change. But I can briefly summarize what the committee has done for these. In terms of the MSYOFL, ABC, and ACL, they're essentially on board with this. The SSC is weighing in on this, and we'll make a final report to the council in June. But the methodologies are pretty straightforward and consistent with the guidelines. As I mentioned, these MSYOFL, ABC, and ACL will be adopted as control rules, and when the new assessment comes out, automatic recalculation of those values. The committee approved to develop the concept of proactive AMs, and actually, at this point, they're still considering both approaches. So we may, we're going to have another meeting. We'll talk about that. By the time we get back to you, we may have a recommendation on a single method or both. We still have a number of things that will require committee discussion, such as for the top-down method, what is the buffer they want to put in for management uncertainty? For the bottom-up approach, what is the precautionary increase that they want to apply to the target TAC? What kinds of reactive management measures they want to propose, how to approach that. Monkfish is very ubiquitous. It's caught in a whole host of fisheries. And, you've had this discussion with respect to winter flounder, yellowtail flounder, and the scallop fishery, and and so on. It's, same thing is going to happen with monkfish. But maybe we can take lessons from the earlier conversations and develop something that's a little more focused on the sources of the overage reaching the need for reactive accountability measures. The committee is recommending that we continue with a 3-year specification process with the automatic extension if the council hasn't taken action within that time frame. And actually that will enable us to accommodate an assessment schedule that may not be exactly dovetail with our plan. In terms of the changes to the current management system, the days at sea and trip limit system, one of the things that the committee has discussed is whether under an increase in the target tack, whether we would increase days at sea, trip limits, or both. And we've received comments from a number of interested parties on that subject. And probably what we'll do is what we did in Framework 4, which was to go out with options that provide, you know, a days at sea only increase, a combination increase, and a trip limit only increase, and let get public comment on that. The committee is recommending that, or will be recommending formally to you in June, that for vessels that are in a groundfish sector in the northern area, right now there is a requirement for a groundfish vessel that wants to target monkfish, be on a monkfish day, and use a groundfish day until they've run out of allocation of groundfish days. What the committee is proposing is that a groundfish vessel fishing in a groundfish sector will no longer be required to use a groundfish day when fishing on a monkfish day. That will alleviate them of the need to retain their groundfish days simply to be able to go fishing for monkfish, because the sectors, as they're proposed, don't have the days at sea in them. And the way this would work would use the current system that groundfish vessels who go out on a groundfish day but not a monkfish day, if they exceed their incidental catch limit of monkfish on that trip, before they can use the VMS and declare before they return to port that that trip will also burn monkfish days. That system's in place. And the same thing could work on a vessel fishing in a groundfish sector. If they're out fishing and they exceed the applicable incidental catch allowance for a vessel not on a monkfish day, then they can use the VMS and declare that trip to be a monkfish day trip, monkfish trip, and that would be subtracted from their days at sea allocation. The committee is proposing that all monkfish vessels be required to have a VMS. Most of them do by virtue of their multi-species or scallop permits, but there are some vessels that don't. But that requirement could be based on individual areas. In other words, it could be a mandatory requirement in the north and not in the south, or vice versa. The committee needs to take action, is considering a proposal from the industry that both the minimum fish size and the minimum mesh size be increased. The minimum fish size, which is currently 17 inches, would go to 21 under the proposal, and the minimum mesh size would go to 12 inches, which is currently minimum is 10 inches for gillnets and square mesh cod ends on a trawl. 12-inch diamond is already part of the rule for the trawl cod end. they still need to have some discussion of this, but they've agreed to consider this. There's a proposal from the industry to allow them to give prior notice of exceeding their trip limit before returning to port. Therefore, a vessel that's out, say a gillnet vessel that's hauling its nets and reaches its limit for the 15 hours but still has nets to haul and fish in the water, is right now confronted with the situation, do you haul the nets and take your catch and steam around until you've used up enough time to get over that 24 hours in a minute, or do you discard the fish that you know, that you've caught, or do you leave them in the water and hope that they're okay next time you come out and haul through your gear? This would allow them to haul through their gear, clean their nets, and it has a cap. It's either there were two proposals. One would be just a one extra day's limit, and one would be 2 days limits, and you'd be using up 48 hours in a minute for that. So that needs more discussion at the committee level, but that's something they're considering. There's also a proposal to allow vessels to carry over research days at sea. Right now, many of them are not able to use their research days because of the time that they've committed to doing the research itself and not the compensation days, and then their own allocated days. So they're seeking to have an ability to do a carryover. And I know that there's some efforts underway within the research offices at the center and the regional office to modify the whole program. So that may help to alleviate the need for this measure, but barring anything in that area, this is a proposal to address the need that they can't use their research days. There's been proposals, and the committee needs to discuss this one, to reduce the number of gillnets that a vessel can fish when it's on a monkfish day at sea. Currently, it's 160 for Category A and B vessels and 150 for Category C, D, F, and H vessels with a multi-species permit. And they're proposing to reduce it to either 80 or 75 gillnets to be consistent with the groundfish regulations. So that's a summary of the ideas that are being considered and discussed in terms of modifications to the current management system, the days at sea and trip limit system. In addition to that, the committee's agreed to consider or to is considering the possibility that there could be catch share programs, sectors, or ITQs. And they're considering recommending to the council that there could be, it could be based on an area. In other words, you could have the current system continue in one area and have a catch share system in another, in the north and the south. And this would require some thought and perhaps a commitment on the part of vessels to be in one area or the other. And the committee has requested the PDT to provide some preliminary information on the impact of that. How many vessels currently only fish in one area or the other, and how many and to what extent do they fish in both areas? And that gives a sense of the type of impact you would expect by requiring vessels to declare into one area and type of management program or the other. They did receive a proposal from the industry on how to design a catch share, actually an ITQ program and a sector program. And they've agreed that would be the basis, the starting point. It's really just a skeletal type of outline at this point of those programs, but that would be the basis for their proceeding with the development of those should that occur. And I think I covered everything.
Yeah, thanks, Phil, for a good report. I do want to make just a couple comments. One is that we received a number of public comments through the entire scoping process, and most of them were focused on and were related to support or opposition to ITQs and sectors. There is a huge delineation between what's important to the northern fishery and what's important to the southern fishery, and that was carried through our committee meeting. So a lot of the discussion that we had, as Phil indicated, was on having two different management regimes, and I'm not sure of the efficacy of it, but it had a fair amount of committee support. So we intend to go back to work in focus the amendment and come back with a viable product for you in June.
Any questions from the council? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. And also, Phil, thank you very much for that comprehensive summary as to where we are. I've got a question. Looking at the status sheet in our binder, I'm reminded that we did, that is, the council did direct the Monkfish Committee to develop alternatives for sector management programs and ITQs for the Monkfish fishery, but that work on those alternatives should not commence until work on the primary components of the amendment is complete. Timetable's tight, relatively speaking. Clearly, that is the case. And I did note, as described by Phil and noted in the summary, that we do have a vote by the committee to take the Associated Fisheries of Maine proposal and to incorporate that into the document as one ITQ or the ITQ alternative. So I guess I need to find out, where do we stand time-wise relative to all of the provisions, the elements of Amendment Number 5, and are we going to be in a position to actually entertain an ITQ approach in this amendment in light of the timetable that we have before us? Is the committee going to divert attention away from the other elements of Amendment 5 to focus on ITQs? How is this going to proceed? And in particular, we have one idea for an ITQ strategy, and I give credit to Maggie Raymond and company for offering it up, but it's just one alternative that will require tremendous scrutiny because of the significance of it. So that's where I'm coming from. Can we do it?
Paul Howard.
Dave, we've had lengthy discussions about meeting our timelines and meeting our requirements of MSA, and if the committee is not completely, has got to be done with its work by November. Completed alternatives, completed analysis to the come to the council in November of 2009. And if they're, whatever they're done with, they should be done with ACLs, AMs, because that's their number one priority. If they're not done with everything else is dropped and the amendment goes forward. That's the timeline. So the committee has a lot of work to do between now and November to get everything done of 2009. So, and if they're not done, what goes forward is the public hearings and everything else on ACLs and AMs.
Okay, thank you. But let's assume that they get everything done in time, and now they can focus on ITQ management, all right, consistent with the charge that we gave them. What will be the strategy of the committee to deal with ITQs for the Monkfish fishery? That is, we only have one idea on the table right now. I'm sure it's a good idea, but this is going to be extremely controversial and difficult to work through. We should. But so what's the strategy? How will a relatively small committee devoted specifically to this issue deal with it, since it's so big and has such implications for other fisheries?
Sally had her hand up, and I'll pass until after her.
Sally?
Yeah, and this is very much related to the discussion that's happening now. I'm wondering what the committee discussion was on how either an ITQ or a sector approach actually does the things that are the mandate of from the Magnuson Act to the council to do right now, and that is to implement catch limits and accountability measures. Those are inherent in those approaches. So while some people have been, you know, over the past few years characterized these as separate things, they in fact can and do achieve the requirements of the Magnuson Act. Plus, there's a strong interest from industry in pursuing these ideas. So I'm just wondering how you talked about these components of the amendment serving the same end, that being compliance with Magnuson.
We've had exactly one committee meeting where we spent a great deal of the morning reviewing and receiving scoping comments. There's very impassioned feelings about sectors and ITQs, and the committee moved ahead perhaps prematurely in entering them into the document, but they're important accountability measures. Very clearly, we intend to focus the amendment, get our work done, and try to move forward with some whether or not these are viable alternative accountability measures or not. I don't know yet, but. Our next step is to determine at our next meeting what's feasible and what's not to have in this document, and focus on what our obligations are, and then move ahead and have the council the document that we agreed and are committed to providing.
Yeah, I'd suggest that since it is so early, that rather than divvying up the fishery north and south, despite the fact that the interest in the north is in an ITQ approach, interest in the south right now seems to be mostly, though I don't know, not exclusively, in a sector approach, that both remain on the table for the full range of the species, rather than divvying it up prematurely, so that people can, in the north and south, can have the benefit of the discussion and analysis that will be forthcoming, so that they can figure out for themselves which approach makes more sense to them, or if neither approach makes sense for them.
We had somewhat of a Hatfield-McCoy type of conversation for a while between the north and the south. I concur with that idea. There's a lot of positive benefits to both sectors and ITQs for the monk fishery. And what we can and cannot do, I'm not sure yet. But, I mean, there's multiple different ways of looking at sectors. We only began the conversation on whether or not there should be individual sectors, or how to incorporate sectors into monkfish into the existing groundfish sectors. There's a lot of thought. We're going to try to put some time into coming up with some talking points and focus the discussion with only probably two more committee meetings and one AP meeting between now and June.
One of the other things that, you know, we've discussed a number of times is the two-thirds referendum, and that you can't go out early to the industry with a referendum. The council has to specifically approve what that ITQ program will be and then go out with a referendum. So I think if the industry is expecting that there would be an ITQ program in Amendment 5, I think that's not a good expectation, because there's no way we can develop a program, vote on it, and then have a referendum on that program, get everything back and put it into Amendment 5. So that's why the Executive Committee and the Council voted on meet your ACL AM requirements first, make sure we satisfy the law, then move on and do all the other things after that, because it's just impossible with that two-thirds referendum.
And as you say, the devil's in the details.
Rodney? No. Anyone else in the council? Phil?
One element to consider in establishing the annual catch target accountability measure, the proactive accountability measure, to take into account management uncertainty. We have a history with the current management system, and we have a list of sources of management uncertainty. We kind of have a sense of how certain we can be about the effectiveness of management measures. In fact, we looked at the history of the fishery relative to its target tack, what the catches have been, and in a sense trying to get our handle on that. Either sectors or ITQs represent a new management system, and while they may result in, you know, hard quota type closures, we don't really have any experience with them here. We have two very discrete sectors that have been in place for a few years now, but a very much different type of fishery than monkfish, which is essentially caught in every fishery, and the one ITQ program, which is, again, a very discrete fishery, and we don't know what the certainty is around the management of that. And one of the elements of that is a robust, near real-time catch monitoring system, which we don't yet have. So that's going to be another source of uncertainty. So when we go to establish our ACTs here, I think the council will need to consider whether or not the same degree of management uncertainty applies to the current system as it does to either sectors or ITQs if we go forward with that. I don't think you can select your ACT and then apply the same, assume that the same degree of management uncertainty exists whether you have the current system of days at sea and trip limits or one of these other catch share programs.
Anyone else in the council? Go to the audience. Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Now, listening to the council for the last 2 days, going back to the Interspecies Committee meeting, I really think it's going to be critical to combine monkfish, skates, and groundfish. And I would really suggest that the council, through the Interspecies Committee, really get to work on it. Maybe instead of forming an industry advisors group to that committee, actually form a working group with a very specific charge to look at combining the plans and whether it's a good idea and then how to proceed to do it. I think that's critical because we're going to really get into a conundrum here. The other thing that Phil touched on is that we're talking about all these things that go right back to similar to the quota system in the late 70s, basically counting landings by species, whether it's catch shares or what have you. And without an independent 100% waymaster program, none of these things are going to work, and it's really time to start figuring out how to do that. I mean, I just think in the 70s, I saw lots of fish boxes of codfish with black lateral lines, a lot of boxes of whiting that were relatively flat fish. We're going to go back to that if we haven't already. And the more that we start getting into these species by species, pound by pound accounting, the dealer reports are going to be is equal to VTRs in their value for fisheries management, and the uncertainty is going to be greater. And then the more we get dockside tied up and controlled, the more we're going to have regulatory discard at sea. We really need, if we're going to make this work, get ahead of the problem right now and look at this waymaster situation and get these plans combined and look at alternatives that don't necessarily eliminate the concepts of catch share or sectors, but fit more appropriately with them if, in fact, certain fisheries choose to go that way. Monkfish and skates, it's not just landings. I mean, there's a lot of other fisheries that are creating mortality on those species, and so we have to think in those terms. You can't turn a fishery like monkfish into an ITQ fishery very easily, but you need to look at that, and I don't see that being examined in the context of the other fisheries that land monkfish. So thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Combining groundfish, monkfish, and skates, that's an interesting idea. I think somebody mentioned that 2 years ago, even before then.
I'll nominate Tom Neese to run that.
Well, we do have a We do have a white paper from the staff, and it didn't go over very well from the staff, but I think we're going to need to revisit that issue quickly. Anyone else in the audience? Mr. Libby?
Gary Libby, Port Clyde, Maine. I just want to say that we're moving into sectors to get an allocation, and I'd like to see us get an allocation of monkfish, not have it be reverted to a program where there was days at sea counted, and just have a straight-up allocation and pretty much for all species, and that's the reasoning for doing that. Thanks.
Ted?
Ted Platt, Gilner from Newport, Rhode Island. I just wanted to bring to the council's attention that there is a group of fixed gear fishermen that are interested, and mobile gear fishermen that are interested in pursuing the idea of sectors in the Southern Fishery Management Area. It seemed that that idea wasn't completely clear at the end of the committee meeting the other day. We wanted to clarify that point. I don't know if that's the right option or that's the right option at this time, but I think it's worth exploring. A number of us are going to be in groundfish sectors already. It might be advisable to consider the possibility of looking at a pilot sector program for people that are already in groundfish sectors so that we can investigate this and see how it goes. I don't think there's remotely enough time to pursue a ITQ option in this, but I think we should look at sectors and consider it. I totally agree with Ron on putting together groundfish and monk and skates. It seems the way we have to go. And for most people I've talked to, I don't think anyone would support any sort of sector program without 100% dockside waymaster sort of program. You know, you have to have 100% accountability. And I think without that, the system isn't going to work. So that's an integral part of it. And maybe that's something that is more than we can handle right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Ted. That's two votes for the Smolowitz resolution. I'll cast the third. Anyone else? Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. At the November council meeting, the council voted 15-2 to include ITQs and sector allocations in this amendment. And now we're having our discussion about why we can't develop an ITQ instead of just rolling up our sleeves and developing an ITQ. After the council's vote, that's why Associated Fisheries of Maine invested a considerable amount of time in developing a straw man, laying it on the table, and trying to open up and advance this discussion beyond saying we don't have the time to do it. So let's give it a good go. Everybody understands it's going to be difficult, but let's try to get this done. And thanks.
Emily.
Thank you. My name is Emily Litzinger, and I work for the Environmental Defense Fund. And I agree with all of the comments before me, and I'd just like to you all to know that we think that the council should consider both a sector and ITQ alternatives in this next monkfish amendment. Thank you very much.
Okay, back to the council. There's no motion or anything further? You all done with monks?
We're all done.
Phil, you all done with monks? I think we're all done with monks. We'll take a 5-minute break. We'll go into herring.